seems like we've got spring again. Crazy. It's going to get up into the lower 80s this week. Amazing as far as the weather is concerned. But it was a beautiful afternoon and early evening in Tuscaloosa Saturday night as Alabama broke a 21-21 tie at the half and just dominated the second half against a very good LSU team, particularly offensively. And Alabama goes on to win it by a score of 42-28. Enjoyable game to watch. The crowd was involved. All kinds of different things to talk about in this game. But just overall, Lars, first of all, did you have a good weekend with your chillin'? And what did you think about the game?
Had a wonderful weekend. Got out on the golf course with Lincoln. Always a great time. I thought it was Alabama's best game of the year by far. And it feels like Jalen Milroe has finally arrived as a upper level borderline elite quarterback, a college football quarterback. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Tommy Rees just tailored the game plan perfectly to suit his strengths. I thought just again, Jalen Milroe just played outstanding. He was just named co-offensive SEC player of the week, and deservedly so, Matt.
Yeah. It was a different quarterback, and it was different play calling, and it was different confidence, even though he showed confidence earlier in the season. This game was Alabama's defense played really well, particularly in the second half. I think something's gone kind of under the radar. Just need to tip our toe once again to Will Reichert. 500 points in his career? That's just incredible. And then what does he do in celebration of that? He misses two. But with Will Reichert, I think you just skate right past that. And then, you know, there are a lot of people talking about whether or not should be in targeting on Dallas Turner and all these other kind of things to, you know, just post-game commentary. That's what people do. But
here we go.
All in all, I think Alabama proved worthy of competing for an NC. Here's Nick.
You know, probably the most complete game we played all year, especially the way we executed in the second half. I thought offensively, you know, we controlled the line of scrimmage. We had great balance. Jalen played really well, obviously, you know, being the player of the week. But, you know, I think that, you know, this team has created an opportunity for itself. So everybody's got to make a choice on, you know, what do you want to do to prepare and to continue to play at the level that we're capable of playing at and to continue to improve. And, you know, I don't think this is a time for anybody to be complacent. I know that even Sunday morning when I got up, you know, I was like, wow, I'm tired, you know. But you got to go, man. You got to keep going. You got to keep grinding. You got to keep focused on what you have to do to get better and to prepare for the next game, because you know Kentucky is completely different type of team than what we played against a week ago, and what we did last week is not going to have any impact on what we do this week. They're tough, they're physical, they're well coached. You know, Coach Stoops does a really, really good job with his team in terms of, you know, the competitive character that they play with and the intangibles that they have. And you know, they're 6-3. And, you know, they got some really explosive players on offense. The quarterback has played really well for them. They've got great balance on offense. Their defense is tough and physical and really well coached in terms of what they do. Berrion Brown is a really good returner. So they've got lots of good players, very challenging preparation for both sides of the ball.
Start here with Nick.
Yeah, do you have an update on the health of Deontay and I just forgot the Jalen Key?
No, I don't really. You know, I think we would prepare to play in this game because, you know, both guys have injuries that, you know, are day-to-day in terms of what they're going to be able to do. So it's not just a matter of whether they would be ready to play in a game, but can they practice enough to be ready to play in a game? So that's going to be, you know, day to day. So, you know, both guys, I would have to say, if you have to say, would be questionable because it is questionable because I don't know what they're going to be able to do from day to day.
Katie, on the left.
What went into getting Jay Miller and Kendrick Law more involved on offense this past week? And just what can you say about their patience of kind of waiting their turn this year and being ready when their name is called?
Well, K-Law has been a significant player for us all year long, especially on special teams, and he's had some role on offense. But we did expand that role a little bit. You know, guy's a great competitor, a really hard worker. He's got a skill set that I think can be utilized offensively, and I think we're starting to use that. Jam has played really, really well all year long. You know, Jace has, you know, played a lot of football this year and a little bit banged up, so those guys have gotten more reps in practice. So obviously wanted to give him and Roydale both a little more time in the game, and both guys came through and did a really good job.
What do you remember about the 2002 game when you were at LSU at Kentucky with the Hail Mary?
Look, I remember we didn't play very well. I remember they poured Gatorade on the coach already. I remember there was about a 30-mile-an-hour wind that we had at our back. And the guy threw the ball, and it just kept going and going and going. Then their guys misjudged the ball and tipped it, and Devery Henderson caught it and ran for a touchdown. So that's basically what I remember.
Darren? From a novice perspective, this offense seems to get more multiple every week. Is that just a byproduct of Jalen earning the coaching staff week by week, or is this just the evolution of this offense?
No, I think that it's probably a combination of both. I think as Jalen gets more comfortable, more confident, is reading and seeing things so he can actually do a little more and do some different things. But I also think that, you know, the rest of the guys around him are getting more comfortable and executing better. So all those things contribute to us being able to do a few things that, you know, we can take advantage of. But that's different, you know, every week in terms of what kind of defense are you playing and what do they do and how can you try to take advantage of it.
From a Chase.
With Ja'Cory Brooks' role in the offense being smaller this year than last year, how has he handled that in terms of maturity, attitude, mental approach, those things?
Well, he's done a great job. He's done a great job on special teams. He's been a little hurt, you know, which has contributed to, you know, his role to some degree. But he's been great. You know, he's done a great job on special teams. He's done everything we've asked him to do. When he's gone into the game, he's done a really good job of doing what he needs to do. But he got his shoulder banged up, which has been a little bit of an issue for him all year, you know, in the game. So we'll see how that goes this week as well.
A guy we haven't asked about in a while is Devontae Smith. Just how's he coming along in his recovery?
He's actually getting to the point where he's able to do dry land running. I think he's gotten up to like 80% or something like that. So he's getting closer, but we just have to wait and see. That's kind of day to day too.
Nick Alvarez.
What has Malachi Moore meant to the team in bringing energy, but also in being able to be versatile in secondary?
Well, Malachi's a great leader, but he's also, you know, very smart. He's got lots of experience. He understands the system of what we do. I think he really helps the other guys with adjustments that we need to make in the game. And, you know, he's been invaluable. He's played well, and I think he's helped everybody around him play better.
Okay, we got two more. Tony and then Mike.
You've really been able to shut teams down in the second half on defense, or at least improve on defense. How much does that say to what the job Kevin's done in making adjustments in games?
Yeah, well, we all contribute to trying to make adjustments in the games, and Kevin's done a really, really good job. He's in the box, so he has a really good perspective of, you know, what we didn't do correctly, what we need to fix, what's not working, what might work better. So, but I think we also do a great job on the sidelines of showing the players the series before. And the first series of the second half was not a good one for us, but we actually played better toward the end of the game. But I think we need to have a little more consistency. You know, the drive right before the half was not great, and the first drive of the second half was not great, but Then I thought we played really, really well after that. But we just want to try to we're getting a lot of stuff, man, lots of multiples that the players have to adjust to. And we want to do more things but make it simpler for the players so that we can actually do these things and be able to adjust to all the stuff that we're seeing so that they're confident that they can make the adjustments we need to make.
Finish with Mike.
What was your perspective on Dallas's roughing call and just what the technical coaching point would be there?
Look, I don't know if there is a technical coaching point. You know, you always tell players you want them to see what they hit. You know, he hit the guy here, and then he hit him sort of in the chin. So it wasn't like a direct hit or an intentional hit to the head. It was a really good hit, but unfortunately, you know, his helmet did slide up and hit the guy. So it's a foul. If you hit the quarterback in the head, it's just going to get called all the time. And we just want to have him keep his eyes up and see what he hits and hopefully target down a little bit so it doesn't happen again.
All right, Coach, thank you.
All right, thank you.
That may be the most talked about play of the game, but there are others, and Lars Anderson and myself, Matt Coulter, will be talking about them throughout the show. Nick Kelly, I think you just heard him ask a couple of questions in the Saban News Conference. He's going to join us in about an hour, so that'll be good info. But that was like a Xerox Friday afternoon news conference, man. It was short, sweet, and out of here. And I think that's what Alabama wants to do when they travel to Kentucky. We'll talk about the Wildcats as well. Got it. Hey, and guess what? There's basketball tonight. Got a lot of stuff to talk about as you listen to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing. Speaking of upcoming, she'll be with us tomorrow night. Haley Sansing, tomorrow afternoon. Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Back in just a couple of minutes. Thanks for listening in.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mild afternoon with a good supply of sunshine. The high today, 77. Tonight, fair with the low at 53. And the weather stays dry tomorrow and Wednesday. Partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs between 78 and 81. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
And here we are. Man, what a gorgeous Monday afternoon. Seems like we even got a little bit of a touch of humidity back in the air. But that won't last long. By the end of the week, we're going to be down to normal early winter type temperatures in the state of Alabama. You're listening to Big Noon Sports. Matt Coulter, Lars Anderson, Justin Jones talking about Alabama's 42-28 victory over LSU this past Saturday night. Lars, a lot has been made about the hit on Jaden Daniels, and I thought they made the right call. And in fact, this is not going over popular. I thought it could have been called targeting as well, based on where his helmet hit the face mask.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think Coach Saban basically confirmed that he agreed with the call as well. I don't think it was anything intentional, wasn't trying to hurt him. But, you know, it's football and it happens. But again, I got to go back to Jalen Milroe. You know, because I understand that hit is going to be talked about, but the story of the game is not that hit. The story of the game is Jalen Milroe. And, you know, I am not a Heisman voter. I did have a vote years ago, but frankly, I gave it up. But I talked to a bunch of my friends on Sunday who are Heisman voters, and suddenly Jalen Milroe is in the conversation. I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman based off one performance, but he did things on Saturday night that we haven't seen a quarterback do this before, right? Have you ever seen a quarterback run over a safety And then on the next play, drop a perfectly floated pass for a long gain. Have you ever seen a quarterback spin away from a linebacker, twist away from a defensive end, and then throw it 60 yards down the field? I mean, have you ever seen a quarterback do the tush push? And you turn that into you're just pushing forward, right? It's a play that popularized by Jalen Hurts and the Eagles. You ever seen a quarterback turn the tush push into a 4-yard off-tackle touchdown? I mean, he just was amazing. He may be the best athlete at the quarterback position that Nick Saban has ever had, and that is saying a lot, Matt.
It helped that it looked like they put more design runs in, and I don't think there's any question. In fact, I think I saw Tommy Rees put several new wrinkles into the Alabama offense, and I liked them, and they were successful. And, yes, man, Milroe played one of the best games at quarterback we've ever seen in Crimson. But I have to pshaw the Heisman talk. Come on.
No, I'm just saying he will get votes. I'm merely a conduit of information here, Matt. I'm not saying that I would vote for him or I would even put him in the top five, but I'm just saying people are talking about him because of what they saw on the biggest stage on Saturday night. And look, what LSU tried to do was pretty obvious. They were not going to allow him to throw over the top, right? Because heading into the game, in the five SEC games since Milroe's been starting, he's hit 25 of 40 passes that traveled at least 15 yards in the air, right? So that's really down the field throws. And that's an average of 5 completions a game on 8 attempts. So what does LSU do? They take that away. And he was only 1 of 7 on attempts of 15 yards that where the ball traveled 15 yards in the air against LSU. So what does he do? He adjusts his game, right? And I think Tommy Rees adjusted it too by playing to his strength, right? A good team, a good player figures out their own strengths and plays to it. And the great players figure out ways to win even when their biggest strength is taken away. And that's what Jalen did, right? His biggest strength always this whole year has been the deep ball. And that wasn't going to happen because of the way that LSU was playing Alabama. So he adjusts and put on the finest performance of his career. Now, look, I agree. Like, the Heisman stuff is overheated, but I'm just telling you that he's gotten some attention from Heisman voters, and that is something that is a remarkable statement given where he was earlier this season, meaning on the bench against South Florida.
Yeah, and that South Florida game may have contributed. No, not may have. I think it's contributed to his play since, and certainly his play against LSU. I just think that the talk of Heisman is. I don't know. Is it?
No, I'm not. I'm not saying win the Heisman. Okay.
You're not letting me finish.
All right. Sorry. Sorry, Matt.
Your friends that are talking about Heisman are full of it because that's just not going to happen. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Is there any chance, given the games the rest of the season? Okay. All right.
No.
That's my point.
No, I'm just saying he is now thought of in an entirely new light. I shouldn't have used the word Heisman. He's viewed differently now than he ever has been before because what he did on the field on Saturday night was not a fluke. That was a player who has figured some things out. Don't you agree?
Yeah, if he had played similarly earlier in the year, then he would have been in the Heisman talk a lot sooner. I just think that that's kind of crazy because this just quite simply it's not going to happen. But the point you make, and if this is your point from the beginning, is well taken and it's spot on, is does he have eyeballs on him now where he didn't have them on earlier in the season? Absolutely right. And some of the plays he made, God, manning up on a couple, instead of running out of bounds, running into safeties.
Just a beast.
They might have a little talk with him about some of his physical contact. But then he complimented that with some really, really terrific passing, too. And all in all, Alabama's offense, I love the play of their running backs. Kept thinking they were going to break one for 60. They would break one for 15 or 20, which was pretty good, but always getting four or five. I think Alabama's offensive line, Lars, talk about them for a minute. I think that they played their best game of the year by far.
Oh, absolutely. And look, this is an LSU defense that was not great, but I did not think Alabama was going to put up 42 on them. That's for sure. You know, I thought it was interesting, too, during his interview session after the game, Jalen Milroe told media members, I think it was three times, that was, quote, not a finished product. But still, I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback improve so much from September to November as Jalen. I mean, really, it's just it's crazy. And, you know, He was even offered, and I see after the game, a reporter asked him to make his case for the Heisman Trophy. Okay. And he basically just said, I'm not anywhere where I want to be. And I get that was sort of a ridiculous question. And then he said the perfect thing. And it will be interesting. In this upcoming game against Kentucky, Matt, that's coming off an emotional win and you're going on the road to a place that Alabama doesn't play that often for whatever reason, scheduling quirks. And we'll get into it throughout the week, but I think this could be a bit of a, it's almost like it's not a trap game, but it's just one of those games that could be closer than we think it should be.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it ought to keep Alabama's attention this week for sure. And I think it will. These are games in the past, even if the other team did play Alabama tough for a while, Alabama eventually pulls away. Nick Saban does not make a habit of losing these games. And I don't think this is going to happen, but you can't take Kentucky lightly. Just ask Tennessee. Kentucky almost beat them, and they've played heads up on a lot of teams on their schedule, and that will continue. I want to go back to the offense, and I want to just kind of let's throw up some confetti for the coaches. I think Tommy Rees, who was under fire earlier in the year, has he is gradually and becoming a really good play caller, and that's why Alabama's putting 42 up on LSU. But also to Eric Wolford and the offensive line coach. That line has, you know, the only part of that football team that's gotten better and better as much week to week is Milroe. The offensive line. But then the defensive line and Freddie Roach. And, man, I thought Kevin Steele worked magic in the second half. In the second half, they rushed five and they tried to keep Jalen Daniels more in a cup. And he still couldn't do it. But they were better at doing it, and it was a passing play where Alabama's rush from the outside kept Daniels in the pocket when he got hit in the face mask. So, I think the coaches are improving just as much as the team is, and that's a really good thing to see.
Yeah, I thought the defense just showed great resilience, made big plays when they had to. Jaden Daniels, he is special. Do you think how good of an NFL player do you think he'll be, Matt?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and you're better at breaking down in the NFL. I just don't know, but every time we are seeing quarterbacks run more. Look at Jalen Hurts. He's the leading touchdown quarterback scorer in Philadelphia history, and by the way, that includes Randall Cunningham.
Wow.
And He hasn't been playing that ball.
But,
you know, I'm just going to have to DQ myself. I'll think about it more and more. But you're an NFL guy. Do you think he will be an above average or a clipboard holder? What's his future?
I'd really have to look into it more. But I think he just seems like he strikes me as a winner. You know, I know things didn't go his way on Saturday night, but he's got a special charisma to him, an attitude of confidence that he projects that all the great quarterbacks, especially one Joe Burrow, who torched the Buffalo Bills on Sunday night. He's got that it factor.
Torched when you win by 7?
No, he played great.
Oh, I know.
Joe Burrow played great.
We need a jar that Lars has to put a dollar into every time he mentions Nebraska or Joe Burrow.
Well, you and I would be at Orange Beach in a couple of months.
Well, they did on the telecast on Sunday night. They did show a picture of Joe Burrow as a kid wearing a Nebraska uniform. And I just, you know, take me now, God. Take me now.
On that note, we'll take a break. Be back. By the way, if you'd like to join us, we got 30 minutes of full bore Big Noon Sports, and you can call us. Hey, your comments on the LSU game, please, they are welcome at 205-342-9904. Back in a second.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
With Lars Anderson. Appreciate you folks dialing us in. Nick Saban, Saturday night.
Oh, the fans are great. I mean, it was great. I mean, the atmosphere was great. It cost them some penalties and critical times in the game, which gave us a favorable down and distance, which helped us on defense tremendously. But the atmosphere in the stadium in the last two games, I don't think you could ever ask for more. And I certainly thank the fans for it. I asked them to do it. They responded really well. They played for 60 minutes, just like our players, and God love them for it.
You know, that's a quote I think should be used over and over again, and probably will be, that the fans played for 60 minutes just like the players did. That's great. And, Lars, I think they had significant impact, particularly on two penalties in the second half when they contributed to five-yard pre-snap penalties on LSU.
Yeah, and
stopped drives, Lars. They stopped drives.
No, and look, LSU entered the game averaging 47.5 points per game and held to 7 in the second half. And I think a big reason or a reason was the fans. And I mean, there was some stuff on social media going around that the fans broke the decibel record at Bryant-Denny Stadium during Terrion Arnold's interception in the fourth quarter with the meter going to 113.1, whatever the heck that means. But it underscores a large
decibel level, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. But it underscores a larger point that, again, I was not there in attendance. I was on kid duty, and kids really had a good time watching the game. But it seemed to me from afar, and again, and then talking to people who were there, that it these last two home games were as loud as any in sort of recent memory. Because, I mean, you know this, and we talked about it, Matt, and you know it's far better than I do. The history of Alabama fans that their caricature is that they sit on their hands, right? That they don't make a lot of noise. But doesn't it just seem different these last two home games?
Absolutely. Like nothing I've ever seen at Alabama. And I've used the term hand sitting, and I don't think it's fair, really, because that would mean Alabama fans are very complacent. They're not, and never have been. They've always cheered for their Crimson Tide, but just at times it just didn't seem like it was as much as others. But I've done a little thinking on this, Lars. You know, some of this has to do with the configuration of your stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, places that you've been to Tiger Stadium, that to me is more conducive for keeping the sound inside. You know, mm-hmm. Alabama's kind of open. But mm-hmm. that being said, I heard the very same thing after the ball game, that it went to 113 on the decibel scale, something like that. And it was very, very loud. Even on television, you could tell when Dallas Turner tipped that pass and Terrion Arnold caught it for the interception. It was unbelievably loud. And I'm talking Tiger Stadium loud, Auburn loud. But and it was also maybe, I mean, there were several big plays in that game. Would that be the biggest, or is it fair to pick one out?
That's right there among them. What did you think? Just right away, it just felt like the atmosphere was as electric as it's been in a long time. And also, it felt like, at least watching it on television, it felt like the players really fed off of that, I mean, right out of the gate.
I believe you're exactly right. Yeah. They can feel it. They do feel it. And it does have an influence. There is absolutely no question about it. Yeah, it was really, really good to see. And that's two in a row. And you just kind of hope it you can maintain that. But it's not going to happen this year because we're all – Alabama's on the road. Then you got UTC. And, you expect kind of the norm when you have a UTC when the Mocs come to town. And then the last game of the year is at Auburn.
Go ahead, Justin.
Sorry, I just have a quick fun fact that I think Lars is going to like. The 113 was the loudest point on Saturday for us, and that was after the Terrion Arnold interception. The loudest college football game ever came in at 133.6 decibels in Husky Stadium, Washington. And any mm-hmm. guess what team they were playing?
They're playing Nebraska. Yeah, and you know why it's so loud there? Because Matt was talking about the configuration of Bryant Denny and how it's open. But at Husky Stadium, it's like they have these tin roofs, right, that cover it because it's constantly raining in Seattle. And the sound goes up and it comes right back down. And right. It gets so loud there that it – and I've covered games there. And that probably would have been the Nebraska game and maybe – I think it's when they beat Nebraska, maybe in 1990?
92.
92. Okay, I was close.
Good.
Steve Ettman was on that team, I believe, the defensive tackle who was picked number one overall. But Matt, you have a unique a way to analyze the impact of a crowd because for years you traveled week in and week out with UAB, right? And so you would see how they reacted to the home crowd, and then how they reacted to an opposing crowd. And not just, you know, on television, it's hard to see, but you are there in the stadium and able to see, you know, body language, what's going on the sideline, confusion. Is there any game that, that sticks out in your mind of when they were really impacted by a crowd on the road? And also, you know, there's just some teams, for some reason, they play really well on the road. And right. Our buddy Jay Barker said he loved playing on the road. He loved everything about it. He enjoyed playing on the road, I mean, about as much as playing at home. What do you think it is that enables a team to be really good in a loud, hostile environment?
First, in reference to the loudest ever, and I didn't have a measurement device to refute the reports of the Washington, Nebraska, but I was there in 86 when Auburn was playing at LSU, and LSU scored in the waning moments of the fourth quarter, and that's the one that set off the seismograph.
Yeah, that's the earthquake game, right?
Yeah, that's the earthquake game. And that's the loudest I've ever heard. I couldn't talk to my photographer, and he was 6 inches away. It was amazing, and it was sustaining, too. But I will say this about observations on the road. I think at times silence is equally compelling to a visiting team. When you can shut the crowd up, that fires you up. Mm. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Silence is deafening and inspiring to a visiting team.
Yeah, there's actually more power, right, that you feel when you quiet somebody, when you shut them up, than when you fire them up.
Yep. That is totally
true.
That's
interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Well, it's pretty cool. And let me tell you, college crowds, I was watching some of the pregame stuff of the Alabama, you know, the tailgating, what's going on in the quad, the way 66-year-old men dress up. And it's just, there is nothing like it. And I'll share a quick story about that when we get back. You're listening to Big Noon Sports. It is presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Gary Harris. We got a jam-packed Gary Harris Show on Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. The head coach of the Alabama baseball team, Rob Vaughn, will join me to talk about the great fall the Crimson Tide is having, plus Drew DeArmond and the Titans report with Kayla Anderson. All that at 9 a.m. on the Gary Harris Show Tuesday morning.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at laura.lee@thebamabroker.com. That's laura.lee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mild afternoon with a good supply of sunshine. The high today, 77. Tonight, fair with the low at 53. And the weather stays dry tomorrow and Wednesday. Partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs between 78 and 81. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 75 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Well, I mean, it's obvious that the guy is much more comfortable as a passer. He's reading things more quickly, getting the ball to the right guy. He's making really good decisions when he has to improvise. Those things, we want to continue to help him grow and develop. But I think he's learned to play the next play. You know, I think that, you know, early in the year, he would get frustrated if he made a bad throw or whatever. And, you know, now he's learning to play the next play. You know, and that's what I told the players, you know, before we played the game. I said, you got to keep playing the next play. You got to be in the moment, because the next play may be the play that is the difference in the game when you play games like this. So you can't worry about what happened on the last play, whether it was good or bad or whatever. And, you know, he's bought into that, and I think that's helped him be more consistent.
Lars, as he has progressed and obviously gotten better, don't you think that bounces around the heads of the coaches on the opposing schedule?
Yeah.
As, you know, now the way you have to defend this guy is totally different than the way you did from Texas on.
Yeah, absolutely. And he just came out, and it just, it's almost like he looked like a different player. You know, he played with confidence, with an assuredness. And yeah, LSU threw some things at him that, you know, wasn't necessarily expecting, meaning really just taking away the longer throws and playing the safeties deep, so that opens up the run. And I think the more active he is in the running game, it gives him confidence, because let's be frank here, like this guy is a dynamic runner. I mean, he is. I'm trying to think of an equivalent, and I go back to like you know, Thomas Lott, Elvis Peacock, I'm dropping some old school wishbone quarterback from Oklahoma names that just would absolutely, you know, just eat your lunch by running the ball, running the option. And I would actually love to see a little more option game in with Alabama. And I thought the running backs ran with more sort of authority. I don't know. It just seemed different to me. Everything seemed different about this offense.
Yeah, and it changed. Well, I knew, you know, they're going to put new wrinkles in, but some of the wrinkles that they put in, I didn't see coming. I knew there was going to be some triple option put in there. I liked it. It was successful. But there were completely different formations as well, and I think they kind of threw LSU for a loop. Yeah, that all, you know, all benefited the Alabama offense. And let's talk about somebody else who's been on the field. He's played every game. But Jam Miller had a significant role in this football game. And, yeah, he had one really good catch and run for like 35 yards. It was his only catch. But he also ran the football a couple of times. But the time he picked up the blitz and allowed Milrow to step up in the pocket and complete a pass, I mean, Miller is not a huge guy. He took on a linebacker. He's probably close to twice his size. I don't know if you remember that play or not. CBS noted it, and they replayed it because little 26 got up in a gap and just, I'm not going to say, he flattened a linebacker, but he took him out of the play.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that or not, Lauren.
No, I do. I do. It's almost like on really good offenses, everything obviously starts with the quarterback. And when your quarterback is you see your quarterback just absolutely
again, taking on safeties, taking on linebackers, and not only that, winning, like running over guys. Then guys who are maybe a little more diminutive, they're going to step up and they are going to put their body on the line to make sure that they're doing everything they can to help their quarterback who's making play after play after play. But Justin, I wanted to bring you in on the conversation here. And this is kind of a maybe a little bit of a difficult question, but other than Jalen Milroe, right, who played the game of his life at Alabama, at least, who would be your second MVP, offensive MVP of the game on Saturday night?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think Dallas Turner had a great game. I really want to look to the defensive backs, though. I think besides the one touchdown that they had LSU at the start, which was kind of a misread, I believe it was Caleb Downs, kind of played up instead of playing back, which allowed Malik Nabers to get over the top. I saw a lot of plays from, I want to say it was Kool-Aid McKinstry, that just absolutely shut down receivers, which Jaden Daniels did gash us with those quarterback scrambles, but the reason those happened is because that first option or the second option wasn't available, and he's stuck back there having to make a play, which in the end, Jaden Daniels is so good that it worked out for them on most of those plays. But it opens up the opportunity and gave Alabama the opportunity to get tackles for losses, get tip passes, which resulted in the interception. So I'd have to go with Kool-Aid.
Matt, how about you?
Wow. Fortunately, you asked him first and gave me a little time to think about it. I don't know that he's going to step up every single game. I thought Isaiah Bond had a great game.
Yeah.
So I might throw him a vote or two in that direction. But I will agree with something you said. I think all three running backs that got significant playing time were really caught up in the offense and caught up in the moment. And the three of them, I think, had close to 150 yards. And then Jalen had the rest. Just amazing numbers from a quarterback. And the question you asked a minute ago is going to trouble me to the point where I'm probably going to go to the internet and look something up to give me an idea of the answer. But a quarterback that runs and passes like Milroe does right now, particularly in Alabama history. Remember, Walter Lewis could run a little bit and pass a little bit, but, you know, that was 40 years ago. Not that that makes any difference.
What about Joe Namath? I mean, didn't he run like that at Alabama, though? I mean,
before he got hurt. But before he got hurt. I think you would think of him as pass, run.
Yeah.
Third or something, but I don't know. Even in the Midwest era, you mentioned those kind of those bone and option quarterbacks. They were.
I think the greatest college football player of all time was Tommy Frazier. So I am hesitant to throw his name out there, but they are similar.
This happens a lot when you live in Alabama and you cover games and you're around it. You've been around it particularly. Blake Sims, Kerry Clark just chimed that one in. That's a good
one. Yeah, that is a good one.
But, you know, we all experience this probably every season. Somebody that's very much out of the loop, coming from another region of the United States, and in this case, a friend was telling me about these people who were coming down from the Wyoming area to see an Alabama football game. And guess which one they picked? Or was selected for them. It was Saturdays. And they kept getting texts and calls. This is the most unbelievable thing I've ever witnessed in my life. And if you've never been around it, I mean, and you are going to be impressed when you walk in and you see the tailgate parties. And it's not just the fact that they've got a bucket of fried chicken and a cold beer. These tailgate parties are elaborate. And the food they serve, if you've never been to one, and then that's the first one you go to, you go, my goodness. I think the first thing you think about is, man, these people are rich.
Matt, I couldn't believe it when I moved here. You know, I had thought that there's no way that a game day experience could be any better than Memorial Stadium as a fan. And then I went to Bryant-Denny for the first time, and it was a night game. I was blown away, speechless. And then those people who know me know that I'm rarely speechless. It's a whole nother level. Like, Memorial Stadium in Nebraska would be like at a 1. Bryant-Denny would be at like 20. it was so dramatically different. And it's a lifestyle. Like I've said before, it's more of a social event, and a very important social event, than a game.
You know what? All the people that have come down here and expressed their thoughts on the game day, that may be the most impactful I've heard. 1 to 20? And you're from Nebraska.
I know.
That's all right. You're getting better. Better and better. Hey, when we get back on the other side of the hour, Nick Kelly from the Tuscaloosa News will join us and continue to talk about Alabama LSU and a few other things. Lars has got to talk NFL, and there are some other college football things going on. Hello, Michigan. Be back in a minute.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
News in the NFL as Giants coach Brian Daboll confirmed what everyone feared. Quarterback Daniel Jones did tear his ACL during Sunday's loss to the Raiders and is out for the season. That leaves undrafted rookie Tommy DeVito and Matt Barkley as the only healthy quarterbacks on New York's roster. Eagles tight end Dallas Goedert suffered a forearm fracture during the win over the Cowboys. NFL media reports he's likely to have surgery today and is expected to miss 4 weeks. The Steelers placed linebacker Cole Holcomb on season-ending injured reserve with a knee injury sustained last Thursday night. They also activated running back Anthony McFarland. The Athletic reports the Cowboys will work out receiver Martavis Bryant on Tuesday. And in baseball, the Guardians announced they've hired former All-Star catcher Steven Vogt as their next manager. The 39-year-old spent 10 years in the big leagues, mostly with the A's. He spent last season with the Mariners as their bullpen coach.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Up next for the Alabama Crimson Tide following their 42-28 win over LSU. Up next, Lexington, Kentucky, this Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Kentucky 6-3 overall and a very respectable 3-3 in the East Division of the Southeastern Conference. So there you have it set up. Make your game plans. It'll be an SEC Network game. And sometimes I like the early ones, Lars. I used to not like them because of my lifestyle. Now I don't like them because of my lifestyle. And everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Age does certain things to you, doesn't it? I can appreciate an early bedtime. Some nights, not all nights. Hey, all right. There are a couple games around the country just want to touch on from Saturday. One is Ohio State playing Rutgers. Ohio State wins 35-16, but they struggled. And they Colin McCord, their quarterback, he's not an elite quarterback.
He's and inconsistent.
He is.
He'll be elite 1 week, and then the next week he's, you know, average.
Yeah. Yeah, and that the Notre Dame game was a great example of that. He struggled for most of the game and then leads a brilliant drive late, and Ohio State wins that game and keeps their national championship hopes alive. And, you know, what Ohio State does have is Marvin Harrison Jr., who I think is probably the best player in the country. I mean, he's
especially
just...
Especially Bowers is down now.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see, but and we'll get into the sign stealing stuff here in a second. But when Ohio State plays Michigan, you got to give Michigan a big time advantage in that game. And then you look to out west. What a crazy game! Washington 52, USC 42. I mean, USC, can you play just a little defense? You have this transcendent offensive player in Caleb Williams, and you just wasted him because your defense is so awful. And there have been reports that Lincoln Riley, I don't know if this is, I don't know the accuracy of this, but just the scuttlebutt is that Lincoln Riley is looking toward the NFL and has his eyes specifically on the Las Vegas job. That's just again rumor, scuttlebutt.
Well, he fired Alex Grinch, their DC.
Yeah. He pretty much had to after you give up 52 to Washington. I mean, come on.
Michael Penix Jr., baby.
Yeah. He's
pretty good.
He should win the Heisman. Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma 27-24. And now it looks like Oklahoma State. I mean, this Oklahoma State team got beat by South Alabama, which I don't know if that says more about Oklahoma State or South Alabama. But now the Pokes are in the driver's seat to get into the Big 12 championship game. And because the rest of their schedule is UCF, Houston, and BYU. So Oklahoma State now is odds-on favorite to play Texas. And, it's sad to see that this rivalry between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma is ending. Bedlam is ending. But good way for Oklahoma State. So, you know, Alabama fans, you better be paying attention to Oklahoma State because you need Oklahoma State to beat Texas in the Big 12 championship game. If Texas actually makes it there, Texas hasn't looked great either. And it's so funny, Matt, not funny, but it's strange how college football works. When Alabama has this really strong performance, a lot of other teams struggled. And suddenly Alabama is like, oh, wow, this team, you know, this is from what reporters are thinking. My buddies across the country, they're like, wow, Alabama hitting their stride. Alabama is back. Alabama may be now, you know, one of the top 2-3 teams in the country. You know, we'll wait to see. But another game is interesting to me. Oregon State 26, Colorado 19. Colorado really struggling. And it was so weird that Deion Sanders, right before the game, basically demoted his offensive coordinator. So he didn't. Sean Lewis, he wasn't calling the plays. And the end of the first half, Deion Sanders just made some absolutely crazy decisions. I mean, yeah, Deion Sanders. I don't know. We'll see how that goes, but things are kind of off.
Calling the plays?
Things are kind of off the rails at the. He was managing the game, and he didn't say it was a mistake to change the play callers, but I think it probably was. Any games that caught your eye other than Nebraska losing to Michigan State? Oh my God. It was the first meaningful game. It was the first meaningful game that Nebraska's played in about 20 years. And they just go to East Lansing and lay an egg.
That's hard to understand. Just a game of college football.
Yeah, and the beat goes on. But any games from the SEC catch your attention, Matt?
Well, you know, I think Auburn continues to perform on kind of a, you know, they're getting better, I mean, that wasn't the most impressive win, but it was on the road. And Nashville, you know, not the most intimidating place to play. But and Vanderbilt, honestly, I hate to say this because I always want them to be, but they're not very good at all. And Auburn, not very good earlier. I think they're getting better. But they have won their way into a chance of playing into a bowl game. I think they've made the decision to keep Peyton Thorne at quarterback and go with it. So we'll see how this continues to roll out. I have to say something for my little piggies. Boy, did we need a win, and we got it. Beating Florida, which is another one of those teams just hard to figure out. But, you know, those are a couple that pop off the screen to me right away.
Yeah, and, you know, I was interested in the Georgia-Missouri game. Georgia ends up winning 30-21 in Athens. Georgia was a 14-point favorite, and, of course, I took Georgia. And, by the way, our buddy Reagan at R&R texted us, letting us know that he was a perfect 4-0. Congratulations, Reagan.
That was like at the final whistle of the final game.
Oh, I did. It was. He was just. He was chomping at the bit. He was chomping at the bit to send that text out.
I haven't been 4-0 all year.
But I don't know what to think about this Georgia team. They just they haven't been as dominating as I thought they were going to be. And it will be interesting to see how they perform next Saturday in Athens against Ole Miss. And the Rebels haven't played in Athens since 2012. And oddly, Ole Miss is the only remaining SEC team that Kirby Smart has not defeated. Now, does that mean anything? No.
They hadn't played often.
Yeah, that's all that means. However, this is not a juggernaut of a team right now. Now, they may become one, but if you just based on what we saw on Saturday, who would be the favorite on a neutral site?
Between
Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah. Right now, I think it'd be a pick 'em.
I think it would be a pick 'em too. And I wouldn't have said that. Wouldn't have said that.
No,
six weeks ago. Yeah,
I wouldn't have said it last week. I will tell you one thing: they miss Bowers. There's no question. But Delp can play. Number four, who plays that slot, that tight end position for Kirby Smart, he's really, really good too. Hey, we're going to talk some more Alabama football and some basketball, perhaps, on the other side of the break, as Nick Kelly from the T-News will join us here on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mild afternoon with a good supply of sunshine. The high today, 77. Tonight, fair with the low at 53. And the weather stays dry tomorrow and Wednesday. Partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs between 78 and 81. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Indeed, and you just heard about Laura Lee Thompson. We'll emphasize her once again. She is the Bama broker. She'll be with us this Friday at Innisfree. That's the place to be on all of Alabama football weekends and then some. So we thank Laura Lee Thompson for her participation in our show and as a sponsor as well. Joining us now for the Tuscaloosa News is Nick Kelly. Nick, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. I mean, we've got spring and summer back. But first thing I want to ask you before we go back to Saturday night, did Nick say anything electric? We played and aired and listened to his Monday morning news conference. They're not really usually very electric, but this one was very vanilla, in my opinion.
Yeah, not a ton. I mean, obviously it was interesting to get his take on the Dallas Turner hit on Jaden Daniels. Some folks have been talking about that a bit. And then just the injuries, too. I thought it was what he said about Lawson and Key and getting those guys back. And just in terms of just because they might be able to play in the game, they got to be able to play in practice, too. So he didn't give an update that made me think, like, oh, they're for sure playing on Saturday. So we'll be curious to see how that progresses for them. And frankly, it might make more sense for guys like that to try to rest them up for, say, the Auburn game because you can, you know, against the Chattanooga next week, you don't necessarily need all your guys if they're not completely healthy. Don't tell Coach Saban I said that. One, I'm looking ahead, and two, I'm looking past an opponent, but I think that's the opponent to probably do that for. But overall, I think it wouldn't surprise me. Maybe they make sure those guys are healthy for the stretch run. Especially because they can't really lose a game right now. They still want to make the playoff, and even if they don't lose, it's not guaranteed they do make the playoff. And so interesting times right now, and those are a couple of things I took away from his press conference.
Nick, you've had a front row seat to Jalen Milroe all season. You've been talking to him all season, talking to coaches, talking to his teammates. Can you just discuss the evolution of Jalen? And also, did you see his incredible performance? And I think that's a fair adjective. Did you see it coming on Saturday night?
100%. No, I'm just kidding. I thought he was going to have a good day just because, let's be honest, that LSU defense is not very good. And they had guys out, so if there was a chance for him to do well, that was a good game for it. Did I see him running for four touchdowns? No, I did not. But no, he looked really, I mean, sharp. Just, and that's, you talk about his evolution. For me, early on, he was a guy who obviously he had some talent, he had some ability, but didn't always look too comfortable. And he seemed to make a few panic moves every so often, or a few moves that you just wouldn't, I don't think he probably would make if he was really thinking it through, but he just looks more comfortable, and that's where I think his evolution has been, is his ability to run the offense and to take what the defense is giving him. And I think his willingness to run is showing that, because he's a guy who he'll tell you, and people around him will tell you, like, he's always been a passer. Like everyone thinks about his running because he's electric as a runner, but he's always been a guy who's a strong passer and a guy who wants to be a passer. And so he maybe leaned on that a little bit too much of being very firm and I want to be a passer and that's what I want to be. But there are times where, I mean, look at Jaden Daniels, where, you know, Jaden Daniels has been a great passer this season, but there are times when the defense gives you a great wide open look, and you got to take it and not try to prolong it and then get sacked. And I think Jaden, or I should say Jalen, it's a tongue twister saying those two names too close to each other, but Jalen Milroe, I think that he's learning when to run even better. And I think he's just, he looks more confident and calm. And those are two things that you really need as a quarterback. Because if you don't have it, you make plays like he did in the Texas game where he threw that really bad interception. I think it was, what, in the flat or whatever it was. I just remember it was bad. It feels like forever ago now. But and it doesn't mean he can't make mistakes and he won't make mistakes. But his just confidence and poise is so much better than it was early in the season. And that maybe shouldn't be surprising because sometimes that stuff just takes time. I remember talking to someone early in the season saying that you can't really evaluate a guy until he's had at least half a season worth of starts. And now he's had that, and I think we're seeing why the coaching staff has liked coaching him and why they put their faith in
him. Hey, extend the observation on Milroe to the media room and to the national television interviews. He just seems like a much happier guy.
Yeah, he's really, I mean, he's got a great energy, and he's, I mean, even last year, I remember when he replaced Bryce, that was the first time we talked to him in that Arkansas game. He was smiling big, and I mean, Jalen loves to smile, and he's got this good energy to him, and he's very much so having fun, and he's cracking jokes and making, you know, jokes about not wanting to make Nick Saban mad, and, which a lot of guys would be nervous to do that kind of thing, but you can tell him and Coach Saban have a good relationship, because if he's willing to do that at the podium, that's a good sign for where their relationship is at, because he's not trying to, you know, walk on eggshells, so to speak. And Jalen's got, I think, just a great poise right now on the field, at the podium, great energy, and he's playing well. And that obviously translates to how you talk. When you're playing well, it's a lot easier to face the media when that happens.
What's your analysis of, this is also an evolution question, of this, the play calling by Tommy Rees and sort of where the Alabama offense is right now?
Yeah, I think he had his best game with Alabama on Saturday. Just not only in what they were calling, but just the pacing of it and when to call certain things. And I love that wheel route that he called. That was a Jam Miller. That went for, like, I think 35 yards. Kendrick Law, the usage with him in the backfield some, and then having him catch that flat pass out of the backfield, like, I like that. There's just some nice creativity in using the weapons you have, because they have a lot of different kind of guys to use, and trying to figure out how to use them is maybe not the easiest thing, but I think Saturday was a great step in terms of that creativity. Because, I mean, it's a little tough to say that this offense is going to dominate everyone from here on out, because LSU's defense, again, is not the best defense they have faced or they will face. But the fact that Tommy was willing to call these certain plays to me is really encouraging, because it shows creativity. It shows just some sharpness on his part. So I think if you're an Alabama fan, you have to be really encouraged by what Tommy Rees did on Saturday.
Yeah, I think when you can make midweek adjustments to your offense and then run out there and run them effectively, that's just showing confidence, just bleeding crimson all over the place. That's just a quick observation from me. Now, right now, based on what you've seen, if Alabama were to play Georgia, who'd be favored? Who would you favor?
I mean, who I would pick? I would pick Alabama, and that's not necessarily because of my location and who I serve for readers, but I genuinely believe it. I think Alabama is playing their best football right now. It's some of the best football we've seen from them all year. And it's a group that has not only strong defense, but also some really strong offense. Now, of course, if they were playing in Athens, that'd be one thing. But I think in Atlanta, I like Alabama's chances. Georgia's solid. Now, they play right now, that's of course without Brock Bowers. Assuming Brock Bowers can probably come back at some point, that might make it a little closer. But I think Georgia's definitely vulnerable in a spot where Alabama could beat them. And I think if they played 10 times, it might be a 60-40, 50-50 kind of split right now.
There are a lot of national media people saying that Nick Saban should be considered a legit candidate to be Coach of the Year, and that this may be his finest job of coaching in his tenure at Alabama. Do you agree with that? And if so, what has made this arguably one of Nick's best jobs?
Yeah, I think, is he deserving of it? I think so. Will he win it? I don't know about that. It depends on how they finish. Because to me, I wrote about this yesterday, actually, about in terms of SEC Coach of the Year. To me, it's hard sometimes to pick a coach who's well established and also whose team had, I mean, they were picked to win the SEC West coming into the year. So it's not quite like a Missouri where they were picked to finish right above Vanderbilt in the SEC East and might finish second. So I think that's what's working against him. But in terms of his coaching jobs, I think it's very fair to say this is one of his best over his 17 seasons in Tuscaloosa. And the reason I say that is because the expectations once this team went to South Florida and played as poorly as they did, especially offensively, I mean, it felt like they were going to be lucky to win an SEC game, much less, you know, beat the likes of LSU or Tennessee after that game. And so the fact they went from that to having a – because, yeah, they have four stars, they have five stars. I mean, they've got talented guys in the pipeline. But what he's done with a team that looked like it had very little going for it to now likely winning the SEC West and having a chance to win the SEC and also having a chance to make the college football playoff, that's remarkable to me. And that tells me he's coached just consistency in them. He's coached, you know, helped them become more mature, helped them just develop as football players. So that's why I think he is very deserving of national recognition for what he's done. But just because of the standard he set and because of the success they've had, he might not win that just because, say, let's just say they win the SEC, but they don't make the playoffs. Let's just say they make it to Atlanta like we expect. They will. Maybe that won't be enough. Now, if he wins a national championship, you know, I think he definitely would be deserving of that. But I think he'd still be deserving of that if he makes the college football playoff. So I think there's a difference between if he's deserving, if he actually wins it. I think prior success at Alabama is going to hurt them or hurt him in terms of maybe officially winning awards. But I think you can very safely say this is one of his top three, if not his top coaching job he's done at Alabama.
Will it be a tough task for Nick Saban to get Alabama ready for Kentucky, and how good are the Wildcats?
See, I had some trepidation just because, hey, Alabama easily find themselves in a spot where just beat LSU, just beat Tennessee, being really confident, beat two rivals. But to me, one encouraging thing I heard today from Malachi Moore is he talked about how they're viewing every game as an elimination game. And they see it as they basically got to win out if they want to still make the playoff. And so I think they understand that. I think that's going to help them stay focused. Maybe they're not as sharp just because it is a road game. It's against, you know, a Kentucky team that's not as good as maybe what they played the last 2 weeks. But I get the sense, hearing from Malachi and Jalen, they're still pretty locked in. They're not just taking victory laps all week after LSU.
Sorry about that. Reflecting back on the whole season, could you envision, and I think I've asked you a version of this question before, could you have seen where this team was after the South Florida game to where they are now? And it is amazing to me as I talk to, you know, my reporter friends around the country, when I talked to him yesterday, just telling me, man, Alabama's back. Holy cow. Like, suddenly Alabama is viewed and Jalen Milroe is viewed in a completely different light. And just, again, the transformation from South Florida to now, did you think it was possible?
I mean, I thought it was, I don't want to say, yeah, I knew this was going to happen, but I think it was very clear that Jalen needed to be the guy after we saw Buckner and Simpson against South Florida. So I think that there was some hope just in that, okay, if with Jalen they can do better than what we saw in that South Florida game. But I think there's also a difference between reality and narratives. I think because of what happened in the A&M game a season ago, people painted Jalen as someone who's always going to be mistake-free, can't really pass, he's only going to run. And to me, I never quite bought into that. Like, yeah, I knew that he wasn't Bryce Young. But I think it was more, okay, this guy literally came in for one game to start last season, and so that's very limited sample size. We need to give this guy some more time to see what he can be. Because I think you talk to anyone, they'll tell you he's probably the best athlete on the team. So it's like, you can work with that. You need to have a guy who's your best athlete on the team playing. And he's shown, and we knew he had a strong arm. I mean, the guy's built like a linebacker. I mean, like he's chiseled. I mean, his high school coach once told me he looks like a Greek god kind of thing. And so it's like, you knew the tools were there. It's just, can he put it together? Can he get better with coaching? And I think we're finally seeing that. So I think that this, you know, we want it now, instant culture we live in, was ready to say, hey, if Jalen's not this now, he's not going to be it. It's like, no, just give him some time. And again, don't get me wrong, he's still got areas to improve in, but I think it was just patience somewhat with him. And I think that also the people who wanted to say Alabama was dead, Alabama was, dynasty's dead. People are always looking for a chance to knock down the the top dog, so to speak. And I will say Alabama, in some ways, Georgia is at the top of the SEC right now because they've won 26 straight games, two national championships. And so it's not necessarily Alabama was the top team that had to be knocked down, but still it's Alabama and Nick Saban's still here. And so I think that people wanted to find any reason they could to say this is ending, this is over. And there was good reason to think that. I mean, they did not look good. But I think it's just a reminder that you have to be patient a bit, see how things play out.
Hey, Nick, people can pick up the paper, but other ways that they can read you and read all of the T-News.
Yeah, just the TuscaloosaNews.com and find me on Twitter @_NickKelly, and that's where all my stuff is.
Great stuff as always. We'll let you get back to the pen. Thank you so much, Nick.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good week.
You too. There's, believe it or not, Lars, there's more news out of Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt Rhule just absolutely threw a big time dig at him too. He said, "We own 5-4, but one team scouted us."
Wow!
The team that beat him.
Yeah. And now Michigan wants to fight back at the Big Ten. It's rather an interesting commentary.
I think these next 48 hours, the hammer is going to drop on Michigan. And I think it's going to drop hard.
Wow. There's a perspective from Lars Anderson on Big Noon Sports. We'll be right back.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Wow, this is just a wonderful time of year. And it is. Weather-wise, a little bit warmer than normal. But you've got your college football. You're beginning your college basketball. But, Lars, I just looked outside. It looks like it's about 4 o'clock. When is our country going to do something about this daylight savings time facade?
I'm with you. I'm with you. Sorry, I've just been texting with Matt Finkus, and he is going to jump on with us. Justin, you can give him a call to get the latest on what's going on with Michigan. And as a reminder, Matt is a former All-American defensive end at Ohio State, and now does some media work in Columbus as well as other things. He played in the NFL. Matt and I got to know each other when I was writing a book on NFL Europe, and I embedded with the Scottish Claymores, and Matt's with us now. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for jumping on very short notice.
Sure,
can you just give us an update of what is going on with Michigan and the sign stealing? I just noticed that Matt Rhule in his press conference today said, "We own 5-4, but we were also scouted by one opponent," clearly referring to Michigan. And it just seems like there's this growing anger among Big Ten coaches and athletic directors. So just bring us up to speed of what's going on.
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone really knows what's going on yet for certain. Obviously, everything's been kept pretty far under wraps. And I mean, what we do know is, you know, obviously there's an investigation going on, and you know, the president of the Big Ten met with the president of Michigan on Friday. I think that everyone with a brain who's seen any of the evidence, seen the videos, seen the guy talking to the coordinators on the sidelines, you know, the paper trail of the ticket purchases and everything, if all that stuff is accurate, which, I mean, being reported by some pretty legitimate news outlets, then obviously Michigan, you know, they cheated. There's not a whole lot of other ways to go about that or to say it. You know, they did something that, you know, no other team in college football does. I mean, they keep conflating, you know, trying to steal signs on the sideline with what they were doing, which was going to games, filming the other sidelines, which you can't ever see, you know, on any kind of tape that is exchanged between staffs, or, I mean, you might catch a second of it or so on the, you know, on a TV broadcast, like maybe six or seven times a game. But once you're able to record all of the signals and signs, match that to the game tape, you can start to decipher, you know, what is being done, what plays are being called, what checks are being made on both sides of the ball. And it seems like that's what Michigan did. And if that's the case, I mean, there's no other way to describe it other than they, you know, they've cheated. They cheated the system, and they've kind of put into question the entire integrity of the game. And I mean, yeah, it's bad for them, but it's not just bad for them. It's bad for everybody. You know, I mean, because now you're questioning everything. Now you're questioning the last 2 years. You know, if they're allowed to continue in this season, you know, let's say they run the table and they run into, you know, the college football playoffs. I mean, you know, what's the storyline going to be there? So, it's a mess. It's a mess of seems to be of their own creating. You know, it seems like right now every report that's out there is they're just trying to paint this guy as a lone wolf. And, you know, he went out and did all this stuff and no one else knew. But again, anyone who's ever played, you know, I've talked to tons of coaches that are in college football right now. I mean, everyone knows what's going on. I mean, everyone knew what happened. If you're on the sidelines and you've got a guy who all of a sudden is just telling you every single play that's about to be run, and it's happening not, you know, in the third and fourth quarter, it's happening from the start of the game, you know, there's something's up. And no one with, like I said, half a brain or who's coached or played at this level has any illusions about what Michigan was doing.
Latest release out of Michigan that they were challenging the Big Ten to be careful about taking action before investigation. Does that hold any water? And kind of give us your idea, Maddie, what time frame we're looking on. Are they going to do something here in 48 hours? Or if they do anything, will it be after the season and perhaps Michigan's won a national championship?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm obviously not an attorney, but if you read the bylaws, you know, the Big Ten is within its rights to act however they want to. And they can't appeal. The commissioner can act temporarily and enforce any kind of action, and then the joint committee can, you know, vote and enforce the action as well. Once they've done that, they're not subject to appeal. So I don't know legally if Michigan has a whole lot of legs to stand on with this. You know, obviously the NCAA rule, I mean, we saw it with Pat Fitzgerald early in the season. No matter if you know what's happening or not, you're held responsible if it's on your staff. I think that's obviously going to apply to to Jim Harbaugh, mainly because, I mean, the guy was standing on the sideline with him and with all his coordinators talking to him the entire time. So if I had to guess, I would say that meeting on Friday was kind of a chance for the Big Ten to lay out what they've found so far and give Michigan the opportunity to maybe handle this in-house. And if they don't, then I think that there's been enough outcry from, you know, all the other member institutions. I mean, you've heard Purdue's head coach, you've heard Matt Rhule. You know, a lot of people have been pretty vocal about this and about what they've had. I mean, if the paper trail is true of the ticket purchases, and the budget and the spreadsheets and everything else, I mean, this is a lot of information and none of it's positive for Michigan.
Yeah, and just so our listeners know, you have a little bit of credibility when it comes to talking to coaches, given the fact that your college roommates were Mike Vrabel, the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, and Luke Fickell, the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers. There was one play in particular in the Ohio State-Michigan game last year that everyone has been analyzing. Because there's this obvious video. It was second and nine, right? Can you just review that for us? Can you review that for us? And from a player's perspective, like, how big of an advantage is it? Because, you know, Deion Sanders commented the other day. He's like, hey, I don't care. I'll tell you any play we're running. You still got to stop it.
Well, I mean, there's a certain part of that is true. But there's also... I mean, if you tell me what play's coming, 85% of the time I'm going to stop that play. If you tell me what blitz is coming or what coverage you're in, 85% of the time I'm going to be able to call something to beat it. Now, I mean, is there human error involved because there's 11 guys, there's 22 guys on the field? Sure. So, I mean, is it going to be 100%? Is it going to be perfect? No. But, I mean, your odds vastly increase when you know exactly what's about to happen. Yeah, I mean, you look at that play down on the red zone, a 2nd and 9, and, you know, you've got some of the best wideouts in the country, and you're running, you know, basically a all-out blitz. Safety's not even looking at anyone. You're playing man coverage with a 7-yard cushion on Marvin Harrison Jr. in the red zone with C.J. Stroud as the quarterback. I mean, come on. You know that that's a run then. There's no way that you're playing any other thing except running that. Because, I mean, if I'm Ohio State and I know that that's the blitz you're bringing, I'm calling a slant and I'm going to score a touchdown and we're all going to celebrate. I mean, that's the reality of kind of what's happened here. And, you know, I mean, and again, I think, you know, this speaks to the problem on a larger level. You don't know. I mean, no one knows how many plays. No one knows how many things were affected over, you know, how many schools and, you know, I mean, what was going on. And, I mean, you know, you go back to the TCU game, and TCU was able to send in false signals and stuff. And, I mean, was Michigan relying on that? And they bailed out of it, you know, in the second half or whatever. Just so many questions that now are going to hang over this team, the team of the past 2 years, the team this year. It's bad for college football all the way around.
Matt Finkus is our guest here on Big Noon Sports. Matt, will Harbaugh coach again in 24?
Man, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I'll couch it with this. If half of what is being alleged is true, I don't see how that's going to happen. I think he's going to have to bail and go to the NFL. It's just, I mean, you've done so. This isn't just, you know, a recruiting violation or, you know, paying a player or an NIL infraction. I mean, this goes to the heart of competition. And there's no precedent for this. No one's ever done this before. No one's ever attempted to, you know, to do this or, you know, to do it on this scale ever before that's been reported or that I know of. So, I mean, this is totally new territory. And I go back to it. You're calling into question the integrity of the game. And it's not just Michigan. It's not just Ohio State. It's not just the Big Ten. But it's all, I mean, you know, if they go on and run the table and play Georgia, I mean, how do you know that the information isn't still sitting there in Tim Beckler Hall? You know, how do you know that they haven't scouted Georgia and have their signs, and now you got to force the team to go change the way they communicate over, you know, in a 3-week period before they play them? I mean, that's a huge competitive disadvantage. So there's just so much to this that has, you know, so many different levels to it, and none of it is good.
No, none of it is good. And, I mean, you mentioned you're not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, thank goodness. But if... Let's just say, and I'd have to go back and really analyze all this, but let's say you're a head coach and your job is on the line and you get throttled 60-0 by Michigan and you get fired and it turns out that they knew your signs. Could there be civil litigation?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, lawyers will sue for anything, right? I mean, so could Scott Frost go get an attorney? You never know. But
yeah, exactly. Trust me, I know too much about that. Scott Frost and attorneys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, again, that goes to my point. Like, you now just question everything. You question how much this affected and to what degree And again, just everything. I mean, did this make a team who was 2-4 in the COVID year and, you know, had been routinely just an average Big Ten football team all of a sudden an elite level team? I mean, it looks that way if you just go by the records and the statistics. I mean,
Matt, if I could just follow
up
real quick.
It's hard to say.
Look, I know you're Ohio State all the way. But does part of you, just as a former college football player, feel bad for the Michigan kids because
100%.
Everything 100%. Could get taken away from them?
Good question.
Yeah, I mean, 100% you feel bad for them. I mean, even if they knew, you know, that, hey, our coaches know the plays, there's probably a really, really good chance that they didn't know that Connor Stallions was out there running this operation to get it illegally. So, I mean, you do feel bad for those players. You do feel bad for those guys because it's, once again, I mean, how it happens a lot of times in college football, it's, you know, it's not the players' fault a lot of times. It's the administrators and guys who've made some really bad decisions, and the players are going to suffer for it. And the way the NCAA, you know, works, I mean, they're going to, you know, it's going to be 3 years now before anything really happens. And then is it going to affect kids that are, you know, playing in high school right now that are going to go to Michigan later? So, again, it's a mess. You do feel bad for those kids, you know, because I don't think this is anything, you know, they knew about or they were a part of, but now it's on their doorstep.
And yeah, well, here they are likely to accept penalties for the adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always the adults. Always the adults, man. When it comes to college
kids
football.
Kids play outside. You kids play outside. Well, we screw everything up here over the dinner table. Okay. Matt, thanks a lot. On the fly.
Yeah, yep, thanks,
no problem,
Matt.
Guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay. All right. We will wrap up this Monday edition of Big Noon Sports in literally moments.
Hey, Crimson.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mild afternoon with a good supply of sunshine. The high today 77. Tonight fair with the low at 53. And the weather stays dry tomorrow and Wednesday. Partly to mostly sunny both days. Highs between 78 and 81. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, really good show. Our thanks to our presenting sponsor, Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage, and also to Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. And so we've had a terrific Monday show. We led it off with Nick Saban's comments following LSU leading to Kentucky, and a great intel from Nick Kelly of the Tuscaloosa News, and then Lars got Matt Finkus on last minute to talk about Michigan. Lars, you got any real feel for this? Are there going to be in-season punishments here?
I think there has to be. Don't you? I mean, I think they need to be banned.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, the Wall Street Journal's reporting is, as you alluded to, that Michigan is already threatening lawsuit, injunction, lack of due process. So there will be lawyers involved. Okay. And it's just a colossal mess, because I think Matt Finkus brought up so many good points. You know, this is a team that went 2-4 in the COVID year, and suddenly they're the best team in the country. Like, wow. You know, and then as a, you know, former All-American, he was able to really break down what a competitive advantage you have when you know what's coming. And again, the evidence is just, it's overwhelming. You know, it's not in drips and drabs. It's a tidal wave, a tsunami of evidence that these guys cheated. And the thing is, you have to act in real time if you're the Big Ten commissioner. Otherwise, the integrity of the game is sacrificed. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that it was a really good call on your part to get Finkus on, because he has given me so much food for thought that I'm going to sit down after the show and think about what he said. You know, particularly, just kind of did one of those V8 moments. They were 2-4 during the COVID year.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, we'll pick this up again in 22 hours. How about that, Lars?
Sounds great.
Hey, thanks to Justin Jones.
Join Tide 100.